You know, as you travel through your life, there's going to be two different types of people that enter it. The people you need and love and support you, and the people that you don't need. Choose wisely. My next guest is Chad Bruckner. He is a very dear and close friend of mine, and he entered my life in a time that I needed a good support system and kind and loving people around me. Again, he is a dear friend of mine, and I am so honored to have him back on the show. You're going to love Chad Bruckner. We're going to talk about resiliency, leadership, and some of his challenges in life. Chad Bruckner, next on the CJ Evolution Podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the show, the CJ Evolution Podcast. It exists because of you, the listener and supporter. Thank you so much for tuning into the show. If you love the show, and I hope you do, please share it with your family and friends and give us that 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. We sure would appreciate it. And reach out to me at cjevolution.com. A big shout out to all the brave men and women working in the criminal justice field, wherever you are at, whatever you are doing. Thank you for doing it. Very difficult environment, I know, but you go out there every day and you give it your best. Please stay safe. Take care of each other. And remember this, you are honored, cherished, and above all, you are loved. Thank you. I love telling my story of my setbacks, my mental health challenges. I love talking about leadership, resiliency. If you want me to come to your organization and speak to your troops, please let me know. I love talking to law enforcement and criminal justice professionals everywhere. You can find out more information at cjevolution.com. On to this great show with my good friend, Chad Bruckner. Hello, everybody. I am so excited to have my next guest on the show. Chad Bruckner is on. And before we start, I just want to say a few things. Chad is a good friend of mine, a dear friend of mine, and he has been there, continues to be there for me when I need him. He's been there all along. And again, he's still there for me. He's also a former law enforcement officer serving admirably with his department for many years. And he's doing great work now with first responders. Chad, are you there, brother?
Oh, brother, I'm here, man. You said that and I started choking up a little bit. Oh.
Well, you know, you have been there for me, brother. And you are a good friend of mine, a dear friend of mine, a confidant. You know all my secrets.
Brother,
I'm just glad you are on the show, brother. And I was looking forward to this last week.
Too.
And I was like, man, I can't wait to get Chad on. Because I know we text a lot and we talk.
Yes, sir.
We talk a lot too. But for those people out there that are listening to the show, tell us a little bit about Chad.
Well, I don't want to repeat some of the things because I've been on your show before. So, there's so much to delve into with just our friendship, our relationship and mental health. But, you know, being a former law enforcement officer, I did that for 13 years. I was a detective patrolman. Previous to that, I was in the military for 8 years and served in combat in Iraq and went in the military at 17, actually. So, you know, pretty much my whole adult life, it's been around service to others, carrying a weapon, you know, being selfless and sacrificing. And 2021 this year, I decided to leave and take an early retirement and go be an entrepreneur and buy a existing private investigation firm and had some aspirations to grow it and add to it. And we're doing that right now. So it's been really cool, but
yeah,
it's funny when I left this year, Pat, I was lost, man. And it wasn't lost from, I didn't have direction, you know, and excuse me. Sometimes we say, I'm lost. I don't know where I'm going. I knew where I was going, but I didn't know how to process where I came from, which was an effect in my clarity moving forward. And I just decided I've always had this mindset to want to give back to cops, first responders and veterans. I just didn't know, you know, on a one-on-one level was always something very easy for me, but I didn't know how to do it on a bigger scale. And I really didn't have that avenue or that opportunity present itself, you know, working at a police department, you're kind of so busy with the shift work and the grind. in your case is that it's hard to pull yourself back and look at it from a big perspective. And leaving law enforcement this year, I've been able to do that. And I'm now interacting with first responders, veterans all across the country, and just building great relationships. And that's when it fueled my desire this year. I got to do more. I got to help. There are a lot of first responders struggling out there.
Yeah, there's a ton of them.
And they're going to work every day. I mean, I was just talking to, I have some people really close in my life that, you know, family and friends that are first responders, and, you know, talking with them, and just others too, that I'm not as close with, but there is some level of low mental health or poor mental health, varying degrees, with every one of them. Now, I'm not saying it's cataclysmic. I'm not saying it's earth shattering. I'm not saying it's crisis mode. And that's the problem. People hear mental health and they want to automatically jump to, oh, what kind of crisis are they in? It doesn't have to be that. As a matter of fact, it very rarely starts off at that. It's a slow, especially for law enforcement, it's a slow burn, a slow grind, seeing the things you're seeing, doing the things you're doing. They're not normal. I mean, seeing children be abused or fatalities or overdoses, that's not normal stuff for the brain to see and process. So it's that slow burn over a career. And I was just talking to a cop yesterday, 11 years on the job. And, you know, he tells me that I used to love it and I don't like it. And I don't know how to fix it and get back to loving it. And I said, did you ever come to grips with the fact that you have just changed from doing this job? Cause he's trying to go back to year one. I said, well, you can't go back to year one. Year one is over. You were 20 some years old. You got hired. Now you're in your mid 30s. I mean, that, so you have to look at it from your perspective now, instead of erasing and trying to erase your memories and experiences, learn how to react and deal with them in a healthy way.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, again, brother, you hit it on the head. It's a slow burn. I know that it was like that for me. And as you know, it was just an accumulation. And that's the one thing, you know, you said, it's a slow burn. It's an accumulation until we break.
Yeah.
Because like you said, we can't see that amount of trauma without it affecting us in a certain way. I can't remember the statistic. Maybe, you know, Chad, where, you know, the average person out there, and I'm not demeaning the average person, I'm just saying that they maybe deal with maybe a handful of traumatic events in their life, where first responders, they deal with it almost every day.
Absolutely.
And then to come home and try to decompress and then just to start the cycle again. Now, I'm not regretting my time in law enforcement. I mean, that's part of what we sign up for, but I agree with you 100%. There's so many first responders out there that are suffering in silence. And I'm on a mission like you, brother. I want to help our first responders and the veteran community just learn how to kind of recognize that. But more importantly, start reaching out to their trusted network. And I say trusted for a reason. You just don't want to open up to anybody, but you want to start, you know, you should start opening up. And now we have more resources than ever.
Yeah, more than ever. And you're so right about that. And this is my kind of the latest mission I'm on is, I think it's good to fix and try to fix things on such a micro level, but we really need to pull the lens back and try to figure out, how can we fix this? Like, instead of patching things up. And I really think there's a lot of component with leadership. We Absolutely. Need executives and leaders to really start on an organizational level and a profession level, start to make things more inclusive. That's how we break the stigma. I mean, that stigma is real. I experience it. There's a lot of, you know, leaders out there that, frankly, I don't judge them. I try to show grace, but they don't know how to process or handle somebody in a crisis, or they don't know what to do. So we just don't talk about it. We don't bring it up, and we create a culture where I'm not going to ask you about it, as long as you don't come to me about it, because it's very awkward and uncomfortable. And it just, that's how generationally this happened. So, you know, we need to break that alpha personality mantra and break that stigma by creating an inclusive culture where people can come and feel, hey, I'm having a bad day. Everybody in this world, professional athletes, first responders, special operations. I mean, everybody that is quote unquote alpha and tough has these bad days. And we just don't want to, we want to pretend that's not happening. Oh, it only affects weak people or people that are struggling. We all go through it. Just some are more open about talking about it. So that's what we need to really work on.
Yeah. And I agree 100%. It's the culture of an organization. Now, you know, and I know that, and the listeners probably know, there's some organizations that are better than others. I was fortunate enough to be in my last organization. It was really good at not just talking the talk, but walking the walk. And I don't know if you know who Neil Gang is. He's out in California. He's an example that comes to mind where he's a senior executive. He's the chief of police. And he not only preaches it, but he walks it. It's a culture that he has permeated the department where people aren't afraid to ask for help, you know, the department to provides resources. But I think it's important sometimes to go outside of the department, you know, to get, a, you know, outside resources, because you and I know if there's somebody from EAP or whatever in-house, you know, I mean, I get it. You know, first responders, officers are more likely to say no. Mm-hmm. I don't want people to find out. I'm going to go outside. But he is really a pioneer with what he's doing out in California in his department.
That's great. Yeah, and we've talked privately. We've talked about Chief Gang before, and mm-hmm. what just sounds like a great job he's doing. And, you know, I've had some negative experiences with the EAP. And it's not – I don't have any one criticism. I think it's just the construct and how it's set up. You know, it's very human resources driven. It's coming from the employer. So there's always going to be this distrust, I think, from employees that are really struggling to go through it. Where I didn't go through the EAP because of that. I went through, you know, my back of my health insurance card. I had, you know, the 1-800 number in there. It was Aetna at the time. It says behavioral services. I call this 1-800 number up. It goes right, diverts right to a receptionist or somebody that answered the phone. I give them, I'm crying when I'm telling them this, yeah. By the way. I'm trying to find a therapist in my area, and I give them my zip code, and they tell me what range of mileage do I want. I tell them 30 miles, I believe I said. And they emailed, what's your email? I give them my email. They email me in seconds a PDF document that all the providers in my area within 30 miles. And they said to me, hey, just keep this document. You have it in your inbox. If you have to call somebody, you do. These are all no deductibles, unlimited visits, confidential. So I've been pushing that out to guys and girls and are in the community, that you know, you don't have to go through the EAP. You can. And I'm sure people have great experiences. I'm not here to knock that at all by any means, because mm-hmm. it is an employee assistant program. It was designed to help employees. I'm just saying, it's not a one solution for everybody. Sometimes exactly. It might not work. Might not feel comfortable, you know, try calling the behavioral health services number on the back of your ID card. And, you know, one thing about law enforcement, we have great benefits, and I know they vary from state to state, but generally compared to the private citizen, they're much better.
Yeah. Now, we all go through ups and downs. You know that, Chad, personally and professionally. And I imagine you had times in your life where you were up, you were down. How did you get through those tough times, brother?
Yeah, man. I was one of those, I'll sit here and say it. I was one of those guys that I didn't judge other people. I just couldn't relate to them, because I thought everything kind of worked my way and fell my way. And I would, you know, I'd be wanting to hug somebody, cry with somebody. I'm very empathetic in that regard, but the relatability to somebody struggling, I didn't have, because I thought I was Mr. Combat Leader, Mr. Police Officer. Mm-hmm. And, so even though I could get down on the knee and cry with a fellow officer, I thought I was kind of immune to that. And then when mm-hmm. I went through my struggles in 2019, it changed my life. And I know you've talked about this, spoke about this before, but when you go through it yourself and you're, by the grace of God, able to come out of it, it just changes your entire outlook. And that's why I understand maybe why some chiefs or executives, they don't understand that they can't connect to, because I've been there. You don't go until you go through it yourself. Yeah. You just can't relate. So yeah. I was fortunate to have just a really strong support structure in my life. I have an amazing wife, truly an exceptional human being. And she was pointing things out to me, then finally just kind of to pay attention to it and notice it. You know, my drink, I was always a very social drinker, but when I was depressed in 2019 and definitely going through a crisis, I was using alcohol as a self-medicating tool to, you know, get over that. So things that she would point out to me, I started to pull out of it. And frankly, and this is kind of why I'm on my mantra about positivity and how important a positive mindset is to getting over situations, is we're all going to have them. We're all going to have bad times. Your positive mindset is going to pull you out of it quicker. Mm-hmm. And I just got tired of being unhappy, Pat. I mean, I was looking in the mirror. I'm literally staring at the mirror. I remember looking at the reflection back. This is like September or October 2019. And I was buzzing a little bit from drinking during the day, just on my off day to self-medicate. And it's just so, my self-esteem was so low. And I remember looking at my reflection and asking myself, are you happy? Do you want to sit here and blame other people for things that happened in your life? Or you want to take control of this? And it was like this, I won't say aha moment, but it was a slow, like, you know, a couple of days to a week of like, okay, I just am not going to live like this. I refuse to do it. My natural personality is positive. I've succumbed to my stress and depression by not being positive. I'm going to get back to it and start to seek out therapists. And it's different for everybody. And that's why mm-hmm. empathy is so important in leadership. You have to be empathetic and understand that everyone is dealing with different things.
Yeah. And I love that. And you're exactly right. And I really like what you said about support systems. You know, when I was at my darkest point going through, and you know this, Chad, because you and I talked a lot, it is, again, imperative that you have the support, trusted support in your lives. It's amazing to me, brother. And again, you know this about me, how many people that said that they would be there. I don't expect to call them, you know, call me every minute of the day. But then there's people like you who are reaching out to me every day in those darkest periods. And for the audience, Chad and I have been good friends for a long time now, but we've never met. But he has called me, you know, when I was going through my stuff. But the point I'm trying to make is you quickly realize who your friends are, who are there to support you. And then you quickly realize, okay, the people that said they were going to be there, they're not there. So I guess it's time to rethink who my support system is. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I mean, your true friends stick out. And I was one of those guys. I remember, you know, in high school, I was fortunate to play sports, had a lot of friends, and military. I always, you know, kind of a social butterfly in a way. And I had a lot of friends. Only till getting older, I realized just not that that's wrong, but just realize quality over quantity any day of the week. And I have maybe on one hand how many people I can call right now, and you included, that, you know, will absolutely stop what they're doing, pick up the phone, clear their schedule, have a conversation, just listen, keep the ears open, the mouth shut. And it's so rare. And friendship is what pulls you through your darkest days, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And the one thing that I was talking about this on the show a couple of days ago, Chad, love to hear your opinion on this. I think one way we can bring more awareness and action is by implementing more of a mental health block in the academies. Now, that doesn't solve everything, but at least it gives the cadets, the men and women, you know, some a more basic understanding of what things they're going to deal with, because they will deal with them as soon as they get to their respective agencies. And I just want to hear your opinion on that, brother.
Yeah, brother, I agree. I actually, I teach at the police academy now. It's Montgomery County Police Academy in Pennsylvania, just north of Philadelphia. And I was fortunate to get certified in this Blue Courage. It's a private company that goes around. I know you're connected with them on Twitter. And Michael Nilla started this Blue Courage years ago, and it's a great program. But so when I got certified to teach that in 2017, I started to pitch it to the director of the police academy. Now, I believe we're the only one in Pennsylvania that teaches Blue Courage. It's all about igniting the fire inside of you, overcoming negative things, being resilient, finding nobility in the profession, a lot of stress management stuff and positive psychology. But what I realize is this block of instruction, I think by design, is really meant for seasoned law enforcement officers. And when I teach this to cadets, although they're captivated, I have their attention, it fosters a lot of dialogue and conversation. They just haven't experienced traumatic things on the job. So I understand that they probably can't relate. These are cadets in their early to mid 20s. They can't relate with everything. So by proxy of this, I've been working on this program for probably the last year and a half, a proprietary, kind of the best of the best of all the things I experience, and put my spin on it. And, you know, I'm having conversation now with police departments in my area to go out and start teaching this and instructing. It's a 1-day course, but it's really gained to the seasoned cop that you don't have to be a victim of your circumstances. Now, we know, you and me both know, there are a lot of first responders, veterans. I mean, I know many of them that, although they're great individual people that love to succumb to the negativity, they like to feel the victimization. It makes them feel warranted for their pain and their trauma. I don't judge them. I understand why they feel that way. But it's only through positivity and gratitude and resiliency that we're going to pull ourselves out of that. Otherwise, you know, that is a slippery slope. And if you don't get a control of that early, that just succumbs to a year's worth of depression, alcoholism, drug abuse, and suicide. And it happens every day.
Yeah. And what for the listener out there, brother, I mean, what you mentioned, resiliency and gratitude, and I'm a huge believer in that, but what kind of tools would you offer the listener that they could kind of, you know, take right now if they're listening and they're saying, I'm really struggling right now. I want to be more resilient, but what can I do?
Absolutely. So I had my first panic attack in 2014 or 15. It was the height of my detectives, and things were going really well for me. I didn't understand what panic attack was. I actually made an excuse and thought, because I didn't know, and I thought I was having heart conditions, even though I was in perfect health. I went to the hospital, got checked out. And I remember the doctor walks in for the first time. He goes, oh, everything checked out fine. I was like, well, it's got to be. I was tightness in the chest. I couldn't breathe. You know, my pain in my chest. He goes, son, I don't think it was a heart condition. I think you had anxiety. And I remember laughing. I remember, I'm not anxiety. I'm an undercover officer and combat leader. You know, I don't have that. That was the first foray into anxiety and breathing exercises for me. So, you know, and I preach this because it's helped me so much. I'm a big advocate for it to any first responder, especially in patrol, where your office is your police car. You're sitting there all 12 hours, 8 hours, 10 hours, whatever you work. It's the simplest exercise to do. It's not time consuming. You don't need any equipment and you can sit right in your police car and do it. And it's the breathing exercises. So it's the 16 second method or the box method. Some people will call it, and it's 4 seconds, inhale, hold for 4 seconds, 4 seconds, exhale, hold for 4 seconds. And you keep repeating that. You can sit right in your police car, sit up straight, you know, go somewhere quiet and secluded. I usually close my eyes when I did it, but that, when I learned to do that, it changed. The anxiety was minimal. I got over it faster. It didn't in long last or didn't impact me where I have to stop for an hour and get my composure. I was able to kind of get back into the fight quicker. Yeah. So breathing exercises, gratitude journaling. I mean, I'm a huge believer of journaling. I've been doing it since the sixth grade, actually. So I have probably hundreds and hundreds of pages of just journaling in general. Mm-hmm. But when I realized about positive stuff and really talking about not only the good, but the bad, you know, okay, it's good to, I had a bad day today and I talk about my journaling, what was bad. They also reference the good stuff. And something I learned in Blue Courage, and I really, I implement it with my children, and we don't do it as much anymore, but we're going to get back to it as they enter their teenage years here. But we have good things that happen to us throughout every single day. And sometimes when we're depressed, we don't want to see the good. We only want to focus on the bad. Maybe somebody bought you a coffee or they held the door open for you at the 7-Eleven or the Wawa. Wherever it is, every single day, good things are happening. So it's good. It's capitulation to lay in your bed at night, look up at your ceiling and replay your day in your head. Oh, this happened to me. That's a really good thing where I met this person. Oh, that was a really nice person I met. And the more you are mindful to the positive interactions and things that happen to you throughout the day, you realize life isn't as bad as I thought it was. Nobody's picking on me. Nobody's coming after me. And that's all the self-esteem and the depression that takes over and leads to that negative mindset. So all these simple exercises you can do that don't cost money or take a lot of time, but really can make a big impact.
Yeah. And I love it. And the one thing that stood out, it all stood out to me, but when you said recognizing, okay, I'm having a bad day, you know, the one thing I learned, Chad, in therapy was you can hold both spaces. You can say, all right, I'm having a bad day. I'm a little bummed out, but also I'm grateful. You know what I mean? I'm grateful that I'm alive right now. And that's the one thing I learned, which I thought I had to be all in either way.
Yep.
Because we as humans, you know this, our mind is going to, you know, allow these, you know, negative thoughts or whatever, depression or whatever you want to call it, to creep in. But the key is to hold both places, right? And then, okay, recognize, like you said, I'm having a bad day, but I'm not going to let it ruin my day. Absolutely. You know, and then can I do a mind pivot? And I love it. And again, the breathing techniques. One thing I learned is just more different types of breathing techniques, which I love. And yes, I mean, I love that. The hardest thing, as you know, brother, is just, you know, because the listeners probably, okay, great, great, great. Until I got into therapy, until I started reaching out and talking to people, that's when, for lack of a better word, the magic is going to happen. At least it did for me. I'm not, everybody's different. Mm-hmm. But once I started talking and opening up and realizing I was in a safe space, I had other first responders there. It was just like, the more I did it, the more this, you know, weight off my chest lifted.
Absolutely. You know, I believe we all need therapy. I believe every single person in the world needs it. And, you know, I still have people in my life that, you know, friends and confidants or, you know, close relationships, but they still don't understand therapy. And, man, that's where crazy people go. And you know, it's a lot of judgment for something they're scared of and don't know anything about. So I understand that, but we all have experiences and things in our life. The human brain is so complex and we were not designed to be perfect, and nor are any of us perfect. So Pat, this is a real story. It just happened Friday night. Mm-hmm. All this building I've been doing in my life and personal life and growth, and you know, people think, oh, you're healed and you're past it. Well, yeah, you can heal and you can continue to function optimally, but you know, you're a human being. Things are going to happen in your life. There's going to be external stimuli that come into that your life that you weren't prepared for that are now going to affect your current mindset. And I don't know what it was this past Friday, but my wife, Kristen, and I went out to dinner and we had a babysitter. It was just her and I, and had a great day at work. Although it was a little stressful, you know, trying to work on some large contracts out of state. And, so I was looking forward to a night away, you know, just my wife and I sit down at the dinner table, we order our salads. And all of a sudden I start to get tightness in my chest. The room starts to shrink a little bit. Mm-hmm. I start to get nauseous and I'm having a panic attack or an anxious episode. My wife, who also has anxiety, super supportive, understands. And I think that's really important when people can understand you, that especially close to you, because you understand exactly what the other person is going through. She grabs my hand. She helps me do grounding exercise. That's another good thing. Things you can hear, things you can taste, things you can smell. It puts you back into your environment, because for anybody that has a panic episode, you know, you get disassociated a little bit. You kind of forget where you're at and what's going on. And we went outside and we got some fresh air right in the middle of dinner. Probably looked a little awkward getting up, but I was able to kind of pull myself back. But had I not known what that was, or I didn't have a spouse that knew what that was, or I haven't experienced anything, this is kind of like it was for me in 2014 or 15. I didn't know what it was. I went to the hospital. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be something that is cataclysmic or, you know, a life sentence. These are things you can implement into your life. So when you have it in the future, an episode, you bounce right back. I probably half hour was out. I got right back, finished my meal. We had a great night. So these things, you know, people say panic disorders or anxiety, you know, it doesn't have to be the end of the world. Put things into place and systems to help you recover quicker.
Absolutely. And quick story. And you know this, I'm pretty sure you know this, Chad. You know, when I was on my way out of Denver to therapy, you mentioned panic attacks. I have never had panic attacks in my life. I mean, I've been anxious, but never had a panic attack where it was debilitating. I remember getting out of the car. My sister drove into the airport. I was getting into the terminal, and all of a sudden, I couldn't breathe. Everything, like you said, it just kind of shrunk in, and I was freaking out walking through the terminal. I was scared to death. I mean, I thought people were going to call one of the cops or something to check on me. I didn't lift my head up, and normally, and this has never happened to me before, brother. I traveled a lot. I'm well traveled, but I was just having what now I know is a severe panic attack. So I sympathize. And for any listener out there, trust me, Chad and I sympathize with that. But it's a matter of what Chad just said and implementing along with other things. But a quick thing to do is those breathing exercises. And I didn't even think about that when I was in the airport, brother. I was like, holy crap, I think I'm having a heart attack or something, until I sat down and I had my siblings texting me. And I think you texted me. But then I started to calm down. So it is real. Doesn't mean anything's wrong with you. But there are treatments out there. There are exercises, like Chad mentioned, great exercises he mentioned, that you can help mitigate it. So it was just amazing. I never had one of those.
Yeah, that's crazy. But yeah, and it's scary when you don't know what it is. It definitely is scary to the point you think. I mean, I had the first one was 2014 or 15. I had another one in 2019 when I was just kind of at the height of my, you know, my problems and trying to process myself. And I actually thought I was dying at one point. It's so bad. And I just resigned from the police department. I'm going into business. I'm buying a business. I have three kids at home. No guarantees that this is going to work. I mean, I was under so much stress. And, you know, my exit from the police department wasn't as, you know, warm as I would have liked to, you know, that people send you your proper send off. So I was just processing all these emotions. And yeah. And if people out there have had that where you feel like you're going to die, it's a horrible feeling. You know, Pat, I'm talking to a guy now, a police officer. And I say this because I really want to start to make an impact on the tough guy community, the alpha community that thinks that you're not allowed to be weak. You're not allowed to have moments of vulnerability. And because we know those guys exist and girls exist. Mm-hmm. I'm talking with an officer now, absolute decorated combat veteran, SWAT officer now. I guarantee there's not an officer this guy works with right now that thinks he is struggling, but he is. He won't tell anybody. He's reached out to people that, you know, like myself, that kind of left the field but know where he's been at, especially being a combat. My point is this. These officers that go to work every day, you look left, you look right. I guarantee no matter how strong or weak you think somebody that you serve with is, guaranteed they're going through something. Doesn't have to be big. It could be small, or it could be really big. Be a little empathetic instead of talking negative about your fellow officers, which sometimes happen, right? Oh, so-and-so is lazy, or so-and-so is not putting in the work today. You know, be a little empathetic. Ask them, hey, are you okay? Everything going all right? Maybe they'll say, no, everything's fine, which is kind of a standard answer. But maybe, just maybe, that officer will look at you and say, you know what? I'm glad you asked me that. Thank you. I'm having a really bad day today. Hey, would you mind telling me about that? And it could foster this conversation dialogue that could literally save their life if you just put that effort in.
Absolutely. And you mentioned, I'm fine. That's the standard answer, like you said. And I learned that fine does not mean fine.
You're right.
Most of the time. Sometimes it might. But in my experience, because people used to ask me that all the time when I was in bad places. Yeah, you're okay. I'm fine. When I was, I'm not fine. And, you know, so, you know, if you can, for the listener out there, Chad gave some amazing advice. And you don't want to hound people. But it could be the simple thing of getting people to think, like Chad said, is going up to a fellow coworker and saying, hey, are you okay? Are you doing okay? And if they say they're fine, okay, well, don't push them. But unless you can and you got to gauge it. Yeah, that's the one thing I learned is fine usually doesn't mean fine. People mm-hmm. are dealing with something, and people do deal with something, as you know, brother. Everybody deals with something. That's why I don't like social media sometimes, because everybody's driving around in a Bentley with Rolex on and, you know.
Social media is going to be the death of us one day, Pat. It's going to be the death of us.
Brother, so if people want to reach out to you, and if you're not connected with Chad Bruckner, you need to be connected with this guy. He's an amazing person doing amazing things. Where can they find you, brother?
Yeah, thanks, brother. I'm on Twitter at Chad Bruckner. Trying to spend a lot more time on social media, which, although I hate it, I do find my mission to want to help and connect with people. The only way you can do that, or I should say the quickest way and the best way efficiently, is, you know, social media and really have those conversations. Yeah. So I'm on Twitter at Chad Bruckner. I'm on LinkedIn for my business. I spend a lot of time on LinkedIn. It's under my name, Chad Bruckner, B-R-U-C-K-N-E-R. You can also email me. It's D-E-T for detective, D-E-T Bruck, B-R-U-C-K at gmail.com, D-E-T Bruck at gmail.com. I say this, and it's, and I think people that really know me know it's not, I'm not just saying it. I welcome all conversation any time of the day. You can ask my wife, 11:30, sometimes I'm texting or emailing somebody I don't even know that reach out to me, and we have those conversations, and sometimes it lasts an hour long. I'll just go back and forth because I know I've been there. I know that feeling of isolation and loneliness, and you know, it's a bad spot to be in. So if any of us can, you know, and I'm not some saint, I went through negative stuff, and that's the only reason I learned, and I have relationships with people like you and other professionals. So we got to help each other. We got to stick together and encourage each other, lift each other up.
Absolutely, brother. Well, Chad, I love you, man.
Love you too, buddy.
I love your work. I love what you are posting all over social media. You are welcome back anytime. And for the listener, again, please reach out to Chad. Connect with him. He's doing amazing work. Brother, I'll let you get back to your family. It was an honor having you on the show, and I'm sure we'll be in touch.
Oh, brother. Love you, man. Thanks, buddy.
Love you too, brother. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.